Hey there, guys and gals, all you hip cats, cool kittens, you diesel-powered disciples of cool. This is Tales from the Flip Side on the Diesel Punk Podcast, and I am your host, the King of Swing, the Tower of Power, the Monolith of Machismo, the Diesel Punk, Prophet of Pop Culture, the artist also known as Big Daddy Cool. You can call me Johnny. And on this episode of Tales from the Flip Side on the Diesel Punk Podcast, we are coming to you live from the mobile studio with a review of the film The Shape of Water, starring Sally Hawkins, Michael Shannon, Octavia Spencer, Michael Stuhlbarg, Richard Jenkins, and Doug Jones. This movie was a magical feast, and I've got a lot to say about it, but before we do that, we've got to acknowledge a couple of sponsors. Returning to the show this week is Swap.com. Now, a lot of people ask me and often comment on my style. They say, where did you get that? How can I get that look? If you want to look swank like Big Daddy Cool without breaking the bank, then check out our sponsor, Swap.com. They are the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Stop driving from store to store and sifting through racks. Shop millions of clothes in seconds on Swap.com. Swap.com is the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. And with Swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Carter's, Nike, J. Crew, Gap, and more. There are between 6 and 10,000 brand new items added daily. And the best part is, if something doesn't fit, enjoy a hassle-free return within 30 days with no questions asked. Now, with New Year's Eve right around the corner, they've got a great selection of little black dresses for our lady listeners at a fraction of retail prices. And for everybody else who's making a New Year's resolution to save more money, here's an easy way to do it and not sacrifice style. We've got a special offer for you, our listeners. Go to swap.com and use promo code FLIPSIDE40. And you get 40% off your first order plus free shipping. Swap.com, promo code FLIPSIDE40. Also, we want to welcome a brand new sponsor, The Lat Late Show. The Lat Late Show Presents is a production company that's owned and operated by Brian Hilgby and Ricky Snyder. And they have two different kinds of shows. Now, normally, we don't promote other podcasts or digital media on the Diesel Punk Podcast, but these guys are doing something really cool, and I thought you might dig it. So the Lat Late Show takes the form of a series of shortwave radio transmissions sent across the astral planes from a home pole dimension known as the monkey room behind the closet. It sounds ridiculous, I know, but it's very cool. These transmissions are like an SOS sent across the astral planes to travelers lost among the astral poles. You got to check that out. And then they have a second podcast, the Novel Podcasts, the Denmark Chronicles, the Oswald Grant Collection, Goretown, and many more. And you can listen at thelatlateshow.com. You can also purchase the novels there or purchase them on Amazon or wherever finer books are sold. So check them out at thelatlateshow.com. That's L-A-T-L-A-T-E show.com. All right, let's dive into The Shape of Water. So for those of you who have been listening to the show for the last several months, you've heard me talk about the anticipation for this movie. This movie was announced almost a year ago. And just from the opening trailers, I started telling people this thing looked like a true potential diesel punk classic. For those of you who are new to the show or new to the genre, you might not know what diesel punk is. In shorthand, if steampunk is Victorian science fiction, diesel punk is jazz age science fiction. Now, it's more complex than that, but that's a great shorthand description. Diesel punk takes the art, style, and aesthetics of the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s and mashes it together, fuses it with contemporary or future technology. It's contemporary in origin, which means it's been made since the end of the 1950s. It's got the aesthetics or styling of the diesel era, the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and we call that decadence. And it's got elements of science fiction and fantasy, maybe alternate tech, maybe future tech, magic tech, you know, whatever that is. It's something, some kind of technology or element that makes it not history. It, you know, sets it on its side for sci-fi and fantasy. And this movie definitely has two out of those three elements. It's contemporary in origin. It's a brand new movie by Guillermo del Toro. And it's got science fiction and fantasy. It is a sci-fi fantasy fairy tale. But does it have the aesthetics of the diesel era, the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s? Well, if you've seen the trailers, your immediate reaction is yes. And I believe that is the correct answer. This movie mashes up styles from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and the 1950s. Now, the story takes place, we believe, we're never told this, but there are a few clues that make us believe that the story is taking place in the late 60s because they're dealing with the space race. Who's going to be first on the moon, the Russians or the Americans? That's the political, social MacGuffin, all right? So in this movie, the government, the American government, has captured, and by the way, I'm going to give you guys a warning. This is full spoiler alert. I am not going to be responsible for spoiling any parts of the movie. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch it now. Or if you don't care about spoilers, if it's not going to, you know, spoil your enjoyment, go ahead and keep listening. But if you don't want spoilers, stop listening right now. All right. So, mid-60s, mid to late 60s, space race. The American government has captured this creature that is just referred to as the Amphibian Man in the river of the Amazon. How they found the creature, how they captured the creature, we don't know. We're introduced to the creature first as he's rolled into this laboratory in a tank, a water tank. And we're told by the character played by Michael Shannon, Mr. Strickland, that in the Amazon, he is worshipped as a god, or was worshipped as a god. And throughout the course of the movie, one of the women who is tasked with cleaning the lab, Eliza Esposito, played by Sally Hawkins, develops a relationship with this creature and falls in love with him, eventually saving him from being dissected by the American government. They want to dissect him to see how it is he is able to breathe underwater and in air, because they believe that his physiology is the answer to the problem of space travel. And so they want to dissect him to see if they can weaponize it, or not weaponize it, but simulate it artificially for space travel. So Eliza is played by Sally Hawkins. Sally Hawkins is mute. She can hear, but she can't speak. And Octavia Spencer plays Zelda, her best friend and co-worker. Michael Stuhlbarg, who you may remember as Arnold Rothberg from Boardwalk Empire, plays Dr. Bob Hofstetler. Dr. Robert Hofstetler. And spoiler alert, it's actually Hofstetler is a cover. His real name is Dmitry. He's a Russian spy. And then Richard Jenkins plays Giles, who is Eliza's next door neighbor. And they're not romantically involved, but they are definitely in a symbiotic relationship. They definitely love each other, almost in a father-daughter type of way. She helps take care of him. He helps take care of her. And they live in this great Art Deco movie theater. They live upstairs above the theater. And, you know, it's straight out of the 1920s, a 1920s movie palace. But it's dilapidated. It's old. It's creaky. It's falling down. The wallpaper is peeling off the walls. The only way to get to their apartment above the theater is to go up the fire escape. And that's, you know, one of the first visual clues to the diesel era. The lab where the creature is kept looks like it is military industrial, straight out of the movie Metropolis. So I think Metropolis kind of projected forward what the military industrial complex would look like around World War II. And so we get this very retrofuturistic World War II era research laboratory. Again, diesel punk to the max. So you've got Art Deco, you've got this retrofuture military industrial complex type laboratory. And then, so we've got the 20s, we've got the 40s. Then there are several other elements, like the diner, Dixie Doug's, that is a very 50s style diner. So you've got that element. The only thing that tips you off that they are in the mid 60s are the ties that the men wear. Strickland and Hofstetler, you know, they wear these thin, plain black ties, and some of the cars. Now, some people might be thinking, well, Johnny, the television and cameras are, you know, more relevant to the 60s. But remember, we were using film and TV broadcasting as early as the early half of the 50s. So definitely still diesel. But some of the cars are 1960-something models. The rest of the automobiles, though, are definitely 30s and 40s models. So really we're seeing more of the 30s in the automobiles. So a lot of 20s and 40s and 50s architecture, 30s in the automobiles. All the men are wearing fedoras, long coats, suit and tie. All of the women are wearing throwback fashion. And Eliza in particular, she is wearing clothing that would have been worn in the 1930s by working women. We don't see a big change in style from the 30s through the 60s in like civilian wear, especially in business and work attire. Style stayed pretty consistent. And that's the case here, but you know, you can get the sense from her wardrobe that, you know, she is wearing, you know, older clothes or hasn't had an upgrade in her wardrobe in quite a while. Again, there's only one clue stylistically or fashion-wise from the female perspective that they're in the 60s, and that is Strickland's wife, played by Lauren Lee Smith, has a very distinctly 1960s hairdo and Donna Reed style outfit at home, you know, the dress and whatnot. And some might say that's late 50s, but all of the visual elements are definitely diesel punk. Now, let me just say that this movie is pretty straightforward. I don't feel like there were any big mysteries that needed to be solved or that there were any twists and turns that you didn't see coming. It was a pretty straightforward Beauty and the Beast love story. If I were going to, you know, say that there were any twists, and I don't know that this is so much a twist as it is just an interesting aspect of the amphibian man. He has a healing factor and can heal others. And that healing ability is the linchpin to the finale of the film. When Eliza is helping him to escape to the ocean through the canals in Baltimore. The story is pretty straightforward. They've captured the monster. She falls in love with the monster. She helps the monster escape with the help of Zelda and Dr. Hofstetler and Giles. Strickland discovers the truth and is coming after them. And it's a rush against the clock to save his life by releasing him into the canal and out into the ocean. Where this movie really captures the imagination, though, is that the lead character, Sally Hawkins, or Eliza, played by Sally Hawkins, does not speak. She doesn't make a sound. And let me tell you what, Sally is a phenomenal character, and Sally's performance, rather, is phenomenal. She definitely needs to be considered for an Academy Award. If she's not already, I would be shocked. She communicates and just emotes that character so incredibly well. And you can't help but love her. Michael Shannon played a very similar character to what we've seen him play in Boardwalk Empire. You know, a hard-nosed, very stubborn, unlikable, yet understandable government agent who is a little bit of a religious zealot. And Michael Stuhlbarg as Dr. Hofstetler / Dimitri, you know, he plays this very sympathetic, patriotic spy who, despite his mission, is torn between his duty and his compassion. All of the cast were amazing. Doug Jones is the Amphibian Man, and again, he does a phenomenal performance as well. What I love the most about Del Toro's work, and this movie is no exception, is that Del Toro likes to rely on practical effects over CGI. And The Amphibian Man was 100% practical effects. It was Doug Jones in makeup and costume, and in some cases, I believe there may have been a puppet involved. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that might be the case. In either case, the artistry and the craftsmanship in this character was unbelievable. If they don't win an Academy Award for makeup design and costume design just for this character alone, there's no justice in this world. The sets were phenomenal. Again, all practical sets, no CGI. And the cinematography was just gorgeous. The way Del Toro framed the scenes and carried the story from one scene to the other was just, it was a masterpiece of filmmaking. And the last thing, when Eliza is signing, because she can only speak with sign language, instead of doing traditional subtitles below, they place her subtitles up, like near her face or shoulders or you know, her upper torso, to really convey that these are thoughts coming from her mouth and mind. One last thing that ties to the Diesel era influence is that the character of Giles is a big fan of classic Hollywood movie musicals. And he's always got some classic movie musical from the Diesel era playing on his television. And this is what Eliza consumes as well. Every morning, she joins him to watch something on television. Shirley Temple. It's going to escape my mind. Not Jane Mansfield, but another starlet vocalist. I'll remember it later. But anyway, so there's a scene where, you know, she's helped the creature, the amphibian man, escape. She's keeping him in her apartment. And they're sitting at the dinner table because she teaches him how to not be a beast and to be more human. And he, in turn, teaches Eliza and Giles and Hofstetler and the other characters how to be more human as well. It's kind of this story about the meeting in the middle. And so she's teaching him to sit at the table and eat, and she can only communicate with him with sign language because she can't speak. He can't speak either. He can only make sounds. And she fantasizes about telling him how much she loves him through a musical dance number. And it's almost ridiculously silly, but it at the same time captures the beauty and innocence of Eliza. And it really lets you kind of see inside her mind and how she views the rest of the world. It's very similar to the movie Chicago, where, you know, Roxy Hart sees the world around her as musical dance numbers. Very similar feeling. So if I had one complaint about this movie, it would be that it was pretty straightforward. Beauty meets Beast. Beauty falls in love with Beast. Even the character of Strickland is their version of what's his name from Beauty and the Beast? Gaston. You know, he's on a hunt to kill the Beast. And it has a pretty predictable resolution. And I'm not going to spoil the end. I'm going to let you go see it. If you're listening to this, I take it back. If you're listening to this, you've already seen it or you don't care. When we first meet Eliza in the very opening scenes of the movie, there are three scars on her neck. Throughout the film, we see that there are three scars on both sides. They look like scratches. And in the final scene of the film, we discover that they're not healed wounds, which we were led to believe caused her to be mute, but they are gills. That she was born with gills and either had them surgically removed or sewn shut. We don't know, but we don't know if the gills prevented her from being able to speak or the surgery to have them removed prevented her from being able to speak. But in the final scene, when the amphibian man heals her, he heals those gills. So she can now escape with him and survive and be with him underwater. And that was, I don't want to say that that was predictable, but it didn't surprise me when it happened. It seemed very, very logical. And I was like, oh, of course, those are gills. We get it. So if I had any complaints, that would be one, is that it was a little bit too straightforward. The second was, it was maybe a little bit too short. You know, you've heard Eric Fisk and I talk about movies being too long. This one, although it was, you know, a solid, I think, 2.5 hours, it might have been a little bit too short, because I don't feel like we ever really got to understand Eliza's motivation for engaging with the creature to begin with. What made her think that she could go in there and make contact and not be ripped to shreds? And I wanted to see a little bit more of the mundaneness of Eliza's life. What kind of brought her to this point? And I think those two things were missing. It felt like some of the backstory and some of the motivation for her were rushed a little bit. And, I can't blame Del Toro for that, because he's got to fit the story into a time frame. But I felt like this movie could have been a 4 or 5 part series, or maybe even a 3 part series on Netflix or Hulu. It could have been a much longer story with much more build up and maybe some more mystery twists and turns. But overall, I really enjoyed this movie. It was a magical movie. I said it right after I saw it, I still think Thor Ragnarok was the best movie of the year. Blade Runner 2049 was the best film of the year. And The Shape of Water was the most magical. It was magical. The cinematography, the sets, the retrofuturism, the fantasy, and the craftsmanship, the skill in the actors' abilities, all of that created a magical illusion. And it was magical. it is definitely a solid diesel punk movie. Does it take the place of Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow as the quintessential diesel punk movie? No. Sky Captain still holds that distinction. However, if I were going to place The Shape of Water in the hierarchy of diesel punk movies, I would rate it maybe number 3 or 4. I would tie it with Sucker Punch. And for me, Sucker Punch is like number 3 in terms of pure diesel punk. Now, that opinion may change in time, but in terms of texture, aesthetics, style, for me, the top 3 are Sky Captain, Captain America First Avenger, and now Shape of Water / Sucker Punch. And, you know, again, those might shift in time after I see it again, but it was a solid addition to the diesel punk film genre and the repertoire. So think about this, folks. In 2017, we've had Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them that kicked off the first of the year, Wonder Woman, Live by Night with Ben Affleck. It's a movie that few people talk about. We had Blade Runner 2049, which was a continuation of a diesel punk classic. Then we had Star Wars The Last Jedi, which is, in my opinion, the most diesel punk of the Star Wars movies, and I believe Star Wars is diesel punk. And then we close it out with The Shape of Water. And that's 6 films in 1 year, guys. This has been a great year to be a diesel punk movie fan. And Shape of Water is definitely on the list. I want to encourage you to see it in the theater. Don't wait for it to come out on Blu-ray or DVD. It's racking up a ton of awards and is nominated for a record number of Golden Globe Awards. It will be nominated for an Oscar, if not multiple Oscars. Sally Hawkins definitely deserves to be nominated for Best Actress and maybe even win it. And it was a phenomenal treat. And I encourage you to see it in the theater, on the big screen, to really appreciate the full scope of the cinematic experience. Del Toro is a master filmmaker, and his movies deserve to be seen on the big screen. So if it's playing near you, and I know it's in still kind of limited release, it may not get full nationwide release until after the Oscars, which is kind of a shame. It's only playing in one theater in Nashville right now. There will be a second this weekend, but that's it. And that's kind of the story around the country, which is a shame because Bad Moms Christmas is playing in every blessed theater in the country. I want to know what world we live in when a beautiful fairy tale art film like Shape of Water is, you have to seek it out, but Bad Moms Christmas is everywhere you go. And you know what? Maybe that's the point of this story, is that love in The Shape of Water is something that had to be worked for. It was something that both these characters, the amphibian and Eliza, were seeking, that person to make them whole. So maybe the story here is that things worth having have to be sought out. Anyway, that's my review of The Shape of Water. I would love to hear your feedback. Let me know what you think. You can send us an email at feedback@dieselpunkpodcast.com or directly to me at BigDaddyCool@BigDaddyCoolShows.com. Make sure you like us on Facebook, both the Diesel Punk Podcast page and the Big Daddy Cool page. And follow me and us on Twitter at BDC Magic and at Diesel Podcast. Don't forget, support our great sponsors, Swap.com. Use the promo code FLIPSIDE40. Take 40% off and get free shipping on your first order. And of course, check out our podcast brothers, thelatlateshow.com. Check them out and tell them Johnny sent you. Well, guys and gals, that is it for this episode. Until the next time, swing hard, swing often, and we'll catch you on the flip side.